That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
Welcome to episode 145 of That Great Business Show, where we bring you great tips, insights, and unique business opportunities, all in a perfectly packaged podcast. With thanks to Dundeal.ie, I am Conal Moran, Fáilte isteach. An unusual one this week, we are looking at being and becoming an expert witness. You could be asked to be an expert witness on some area of your business, or you could make a business out of it, a professional witness, you might say. All our tips and insights are brought to you thanks to Dundeal Motors, the only place to look for your new or previously loved car, van or truck. Dundeal.ie.
Dundeal Motors is home to Ireland's largest range of new and premium used cars. That's why you'll find cars from Audi and BMW dealerships on Dundeal. Are you looking for a seven-seater to accommodate your growing family? Maybe you're after a luxury saloon to make a statement. We have the car for you. You'll also find Ireland's largest range of electric cars to help you make the switch. Visit Dundeal.ie today to start the search for your next car.
De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil. Made in Mayo, sold worldwide.
All That Great Business Show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
Most newspaper business pages include coverage of at least one, two or more cases involving business issues. Going to court, appearing in front of a judge as either a plaintiff or a defendant is something most normal people really try to avoid. But besides lawyers, there is another type of person that actually likes going to court. And indeed, some have even made a business out of it. They are expert witnesses who are paid to help prove or disprove claims made in court cases. One man who knows more than any about expert witnesses is barrister and author Mark Tottenham, who also happens to co-present the wildly successful The Fifth Court legal podcast, which has reached number 4 in the business podcast charts. Mark's book, The Reliable Expert Witness, has been described on Amazon as informative, cleverly written, and funny in some parts. But we are a business podcast, not a legal podcast, so we're more down and dirty. And we wanted to find out about unreliable witnesses or expert witnesses gone bad. So we have asked Mark Tottenham to join us on That Great Business Show. Mark, to Fáilte rót. Mark, witnesses gone bad. You know everything. I have your book here, The Reliable Expert Witness by Mark Tottenham. And I'm sure it costs, it's by Claris Press. And how much it costs?
Published by Claris Press, available for €20 on either Amazon or directly from the Claris Press website.
Well, now you've got the ad out. So now we can go straight into what I'm interested in.
It is a business show.
The dirty stuff. Who is, what is a bad witness? Give me some examples. You have sent me not one. You have sent me 15 of them so far. And I'd say that might just be the tip of the iceberg.
It probably is the tip of the iceberg. But I think what I would say in whenever you come across a miscarriage of justice, you will almost invariably find that somewhere along the line, there has been an expert witness who has given dodgy evidence. And this goes all the way back to the infamous Dreyfus case in the 1890s. I'm sure a lot of your listeners, being very well-read, intelligent, educated people, will be familiar with Dreyfus, who was a Jewish army officer in France who was accused of treason because a note was found in the waste paper basket of the German embassy that looked as if somebody was passing military secrets to the German government. And they decided that Dreyfus must have written this note. And they got a handwriting expert, well, sorry, not a handwriting expert, a criminologist called Alphonse Bertillon to give an opinion on whether it could have been Dreyfus. He came up with the most ludicrous theory to suggest it was Dreyfus. Everybody knew it was ludicrous. People who read it at the time said, this looks like nonsense. But they were so convinced that Dreyfus was guilty that this was the evidence that convicted him. He was sent off to a place called Devil's Island off the coast of Africa, kept there in horrible conditions for years as a result of this. A few years later, it turned out that a man named Esterhazy was almost certainly the person who had written the note, in that it was his handwriting and he hadn't even tried to hide it. But they still found expert after expert after expert who were prepared to say, not Esterhazy's handwriting, it's Dreyfus's handwriting. And it wasn't until it was a huge, there was a huge outcry that when people realized he had to be innocent, that he was acquitted and actually managed to return to the army and serve in the First World War.
But that, for people like me, means that you can't really rely on justice because of all the other dodgy people who are giving dodgy evidence.
Well, the point is that very often experts or anybody who's taken on by one team thinks that their job is to help their own client to win the case. And court after court, judge after judge have said that is not the case. Your job is to tell the truth, and it is to assist the court in understanding the technical issues before it. Because if you say, take for example, a murder case, you have a dead body, you have injuries, there may be a conflict as to how that person died. You need a pathologist. You need somebody who's going to do proper investigation to establish the fact. But you also need somebody who's going to explain that, those facts and draw the relevant inferences as to the cause of death. And if that person isn't doing it in an unbiased manner, they are failing in their duty as an expert witness and they're not telling the truth.
And I said at the very beginning, a lot of these witnesses, probably not all of them, but a lot of them are paid. So isn't that the problem? Pay me, I want to hear the right... So if I pay you, I'm looking for the right type of evidence, if you know what I mean.
Well, you could argue this the other way around. I mean, an expert witness is taken on a professional capacity. If you got an engineer, and he was acting for free in the case, then you'd be thinking, well, why does this person, as an independent witness, act for free? If they're doing the work, they're entitled to be paid.
But if I pay an engineer, I'm expecting that he's going to be, if I can use the term, on my side, that he's not going to back the other side.
Yeah, well, that seems to be the perennial problem when it comes to expert witnesses, that people take them on expecting them to be partial, whereas the courts have made it absolutely clear that if they don't act in an unbiased manner, they are failing. And I think the problem is that for a long time, there was immunity for witnesses generally, and that extended to expert witnesses. In the UK, they have gone way the other direction. So not only is there no immunity, you can be sued as an expert witness, you can be reported to your professional body, but you can also be prosecuted. And there, I can think of at least two examples of criminal prosecutions, one involving a firm called Autofocus that was systematically misrepresenting the cost of car hire in cases. Seven of their employees ended up being jailed as a result of that because it was described as fraud on an industrial scale. And there was another quite interesting case, a bit of a diversion, but there was a GP by the name of Zafar who he was on an ordinary NHS, National Health Service, GP salary. But he had an amazing nixer where at the end of the day, he would get people in to give reports in personal injuries actions. So he would then dictate the report in front of the person. So he basically took up four an hour. So he had four reports an hour and he was grossing £350,000 sterling on top of his salary for this cottage industry in providing PI reports. Eventually, he slipped up because there was one report where he had said in the report that the injured party had recovered from their injuries. The solicitor rang him up and said, I don't think she has recovered. So he rewrote the report saying, I expect her to have recovered within 9 months. And the difficulty the court had with that was they said he couldn't say that if he hadn't brought her back in and talked to her again. He wasn't actually jailed, but the Court of Appeal said he should have served between 9 and 12 months in jail just for that.
But that's the problem. He wasn't jailed. And again...
Well, he was prosecuted and he was reported to his professional body. I mean, his cottage industry definitely took a bit of a nosedive. And there's no reason to suggest that what he was doing on an ongoing basis was necessarily wrong. It's just that it is absolutely essential that the expert tells the truth to the court. And we've had the same in this country. There's a case called Walizuski where Mr. Justice Barton looked at a report where they mentioned one road traffic accident in the GP's report, but he didn't mention another road traffic accident. And when the judge heard about that, he said, "No, this guy has to be reported to his professional body."
But does that make any darn difference if you are reported to your professional body? Because at the end of the day, it's the businesses, and we are a business program, that are down with this. And Pat McDonough of Supermac, he riles against this because of what has gone on for decades in this country.
What's he specifically riling against? Personal injuries cases generally or expert witnesses in particular?
Well, I think the personal injuries cases, but that there are particularly medical witnesses who say, oh, yeah, he's got a bad back or a bad whatever from this. Now, I'm not, as I always say, I'm not in court. I don't know, and I'm not expecting you to rerun cases, but you know what I'm saying.
Oh, I do, yeah. But I suppose, I mean, the difficulty I have when you have somebody who sort of rails against the personal injuries cases generally is, what is the alternative? I mean, you know, if somebody does suffer a serious injury because of somebody else's negligence, then they deserve some compensation, at least if only their medical bills. I mean, different countries have different systems. The difficulty, I think, is that the small value ones, very often the insurers will be very keen to settle rather than run the case.
Is it easier?
Because it's easier. But if you look actually at the cases that do run in court, it's amazing how many of them do get thrown out by the judges. Now, maybe they get settled again on appeal in some cases. But, you know, I think insurance companies can be quite, it can take, shall we say, a very pragmatic business decision in relation to individual cases where their clients would prefer them to fight them. But that's just an impression.
There is a massive issue or case running in the UK that not everybody in Ireland knows about, which is about the UK post offices and what happened there. It is an utter scandal.
That is an extraordinary case.
Running.
Yeah.
It has taken the lives of people, destroyed businesses, and. It's mind-boggling. It was championed by Private Eye, actually. Yeah. And that you have it here as number 4 on your list of expert witnesses gone rogue.
It's very difficult to summarize that case because there's so much to it. But essentially, in the year 2000, the post office in the UK introduced a new computerized point-of-sale system throughout the UK that was supplied by Fujitsu, the Japanese company. They already had suspicions that some of their employees were a little bit light-fingered and putting their hands on the till. And that once they installed this system, they found that they were able to catch people, in inverted commas. And so they started to prosecute people whose sums didn't add up. Now, the numbers of people they prosecuted went up and up and up. And by the year 2013, so 13 years later, they had prosecuted something like 750 of their own employees. Some of them were jailed. They obviously lost their jobs a lot and they lost their livelihoods. And it became clear after a while that in some of these cases that they simply couldn't have done what they were accused of doing. Now, in almost all of these cases, the expert witness, and I put it very much in inverted commas, was somebody from Fujitsu who said, there's nothing to see here. This is a perfectly well-running system and these people have definitely, if their figures don't add up, it's because they've been light-fingered. It transpired afterwards, and obviously I'm not a computer person, but there's what's called a known error rate, I think, in any computer system. And they had a known error rate, and they had failed to disclose it, even when asked for it, for several years. Once the known error rate, I may have the term wrong, but once it was disclosed, it became apparent to anybody who knew about this sort of thing that this system was not functioning the way it should have functioned. But it still took several years before the first civil cases came up trying to get compensation. And now they have started setting aside convictions in very large numbers. But unfortunately, instead of just granting a general amnesty, they seem to have gone conviction by conviction through. And there's now, I'm not sure exactly what it is. I think it's a public inquiry of some sort that's taking place. There's a book written on it by Nick Wallace about the post office scandal. But this will run and run. But the expert witness side of things is the fact that instead of getting an independent expert to review it, they used a Fujitsu employee.
Why would they? I mean, that just doesn't make any blooming sense, does it?
Why would they what?
And why would they use a Fujitsu employee when...
The particular problem here, and this could not happen in Ireland, I'd have to point that out, the post office in the UK has the power to prosecute. So they didn't need the approval of the Crown Prosecution Service. They were able to prosecute themselves. Now, the reason the post office in the UK has powers of prosecution is to deal with things like mail tampering. So that, you know, if somebody is found to have taken something out of the mail. But I don't think it was ever the idea that they should be effectively prosecuting their own employees, where effectively they were the injured party. You know, you would expect, certainly in Ireland this would be the case, the first place you would go is the Director of Public Prosecutions, who would then review it on an independent basis and decide whether there's a proper course of action. So, I mean, there's two problems here. It's the fact that the post office was conducting its own prosecution, and secondly, the fact that they had a biased expert.
And there's a third thing. Did you know, you probably do because you follow the case, that the management has gone on to bigger and better things and taken bonuses along the way? Oh, I mean, it's nuts. You couldn't make it up. Yeah. And we are talking about people taking their own lives because of this and losing, as you correctly said, their own businesses. It is incredible.
There was one girl who was working, I think, for something like 7 months at the age of 19, and she was jailed for this. I mean, there may even be, I mean, certainly an awful lot of the names of the people who've been prosecuted were Indian, that there are a lot of people who, you know, who had small sort of corner shops, for want of a better term.
Yeah, which they were,
and small
post
businesses,
office at the bank.
Because they were operating as franchisees, yeah. No, it's,
well, from that extreme case, I have to ask you about the second last one on your list, which is the white knuckle jet boat thrill ride.
Yeah.
And that case.
This is the case of Kellett and RCL Cruises Limited. And it's a funny example. I mean, but not funny for the injured party here. It was a person who was on a cruise in the Caribbean. I think it's the Caribbean, where the island of St. Martin is. And she went on this white knuckle jet boat thrill ride. And in the course of the ride, she was thrown in the air and came down and damaged her elbow. I think she broke her elbow. And she brought a case in Ireland, as you're entitled to do when you've booked the holiday here. And she had an engineer who said, oh, well, in this boat, they should have had safety belt restraints, and there should have been a protective rail at the side of the boat. And when it came to hearing, the judge said, well, what are you basing this on? I mean, you know, has there ever been, you know, what boats do have these safety belts and side rails? And the expert said, well, I was once on a boat on the Thames that had a side rail. And that was the extent of his expertise. And needless to say, the case was dismissed because there was no evidence that either in Ireland or in the island of San Martin was there any requirement that boats of this sort have the kind of safety measures he was advocating for.
But who goes and gets these witnesses?
Well, the extraordinary thing is that and until now, and I think it's about to change quite significantly, until now there hasn't been proper sanction for experts who haven't done their job properly.
Well, now, that's a perfect segue because we are going to take a quick break, after which we will have a chat about how to become an expert witness and can you make a livelihood at it.
Dundeal Motors is home to Ireland's largest range of new and premium used cars. That's why you'll find cars from Audi and BMW dealerships on Dundeal. Are you looking for a 7-seater to accommodate your growing family? Maybe you're after a luxury saloon to make a statement. We have the car for you. You'll also find Ireland's largest range of electric cars to help you make the switch. Visit dundeal.ie today to start the search for your next car.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
And with me now is Mark Tottenham, BL, who also presents the Fifth Court Legal Podcast. And we are talking about dodgy witnesses, but some of them are okay, I suppose. Mark, how do you become an expert witness?
I mean, a lot of people find themselves giving evidence in a professional capacity just in the course of their work. So very often, say, for example, if a company is involved in litigation, they might well expect that their accountants prepare reports and may even be cross-examined on them. That happens as a matter of course. A lot of people then, and it tends to be people who are approaching retirement, who have quite a lot of, who have quite a good reputation within their industry, will sometimes decide that they will offer themselves professionally to give reports and to give evidence. Now, in the UK, there are a lot of bodies specifically for expert witnesses. And very often in Ireland, if you're looking for an expert, it's very difficult to find one here. So people bring in UK experts.
Why is it difficult to find one here?
Well, two things. I suppose, first of all, we're a small country generally, so that if you're looking for somebody in a particular area, you know, sometimes there just simply aren't that many people qualified in a particular area. Secondly, and this is particularly an issue in the medical sphere, because the country is small, say two people with a particular medical specialization are very likely to know each other well. So if you are suing one, say an obstetrician or a surgeon, you if you want to find somebody who is of like specialization, which is what generally required, very difficult to find somebody who doesn't know them personally. And so you would tend to go to the UK or somewhere else. Thanks now to online court hearings, it's going to be easier to find people from further afield to give evidence. But the difficulty, of course, is that the further afield you go, the less likely it is that the standards are the same as here. You know, generally speaking, the Irish and UK medical systems are similar enough that people would very often have done some of their training in the UK. Whereas if you bring somebody from, say, the US, you may find that it's just a very different experience.
But you mentioned there that people may be sanctioned from now on if they aren't true and proper.
Yeah. There was a very interesting case recently, a house in Donegal, where the family decided to put in blow-in insulation. And this
that's
is the
not,
case.
That's not insulation that came from outside of Donegal.
No, that's right. blown into the wall cavity, I think, is what it is. This is the case of Duffy and McGee. And what happened was that they got, I think it was a local contractor to put it in. And then within a short time, the family came into the house. And it turns out that this blow-in insulation has very strong cyanide-based poison in it.
Lovely.
And so the family, the parents and a very young child, all developed permanent respiratory problems. And so they sued. And the defendants brought in an expert from the US who was a toxicologist. And he said, well, first of all, I think the family are lying. I don't think they came in as early as they did, or certainly disputed what they had said. Secondly, he said, well, actually, they took out an attic earlier that had fiberglass in it, and it might have been the fiberglass that caused the respiratory problems. And thirdly, he decided that he was going to kind of come up with his own theory of Irish law as to why the law shouldn't grant them any damages. The High Court judge said that he was I can't remember the exact terminology, but effectively the worst expert witness they'd ever seen. This was endorsed in the Court of Appeal. But what was interesting was that Maurice Collins, one of the Court of Appeal judges, said not only that the lawyers should not have let him go into court, the lawyers on both sides, in fact, he said, should have objected to should have stopped him giving evidence. But he also said there is no restriction on the courts making a costs order against a witness who wastes court time. And they effectively, he said, this is somebody whose misconduct was such that they should have been able to make a cost order against him personally.
Cost, yeah, but as the person would not be sent to the clink.
I suppose the question is, if somebody's giving opinion evidence, can you say that they have necessarily lied? Now, obviously, if you say that something is your genuine and honest opinion, and it's not your genuine and honest opinion, that almost amounts to lying. But if you're not giving a specific lie about an issue of fact, then it's very difficult to prove perjury. But I think certainly if you can report somebody to their professional body, if you have a cost penalty against them, it is a pretty serious deterrent. Obviously, it's a difficulty in a case like that where the expert is from the US. But there's an interesting case, in fact, from Australia, a case called Managlio. This was a psychiatrist who gave evidence in a family law case. And he came up with an opinion that the husband was an unsuitable person even to have access to his children. Now, on review, it turned out there was no basis at all for him to say that. I don't know what the basis of it was. But once he was reported to his professional body, they fined him $10,000 and said that he should never act as an expert witness again, or it might have been a 10-year restriction. But anyway, I think it's reasonable to say that kind of sanction should be a sufficient deterrent to other experts.
Which, him being barred from being an expert witness, left a vacancy. And people listening to this podcast may think, I'd like to be an expert witness. You can make a living out of it. How do you become an expert witness? And how do you advertise your brilliance in the box?
Well, first of all, I suppose you need to have the expertise. You need to have the training and experience. I mean, of course, it's possible for somebody early in their career to, as in anything, but the likelihood is that they're going to be facing somebody much more experienced, so the judge is going to be less receptive to what they have to say. Secondly, like I say, they can certainly be put on the various lists in the UK that exist. They don't.
Sorry, no, there are lists in the UK. So if I'm a back specialist, for the want of a profession, I can put myself down on a list and say...
There's, for example, the Expert Witness Institute. And if you're a member of the Expert Witness Institute, you have to sign up to a code of conduct and then you're on their list and you'd be, you know, you sort of can hold yourself out as available for certain types of case. And if you're looking for an expert for Ireland, very often they'll say whether they're available in Ireland or not. Within Ireland, I mean, I suppose I've now given lectures to a lot of different professional bodies about expert evidence. And so I've sort of become increasingly aware of who does act. And I suppose within your individual professional body, simply to make it known that you are available, that is probably as good a way as any to make to start.
And the next obvious question is, what is a day rate, or how many days can an expert witness, what can he, she charge, often?
One of the great things about being a barrister is that we hold ourselves aloof from dealing with the filthy lucre involved in any particular case.
Oh, come on, you're going to say
so
you
I'm
don't
afraid
know.
You're going to have to
are
invite
Are you
going to
tell me that you have never asked, like, are these guys getting 500 quid a day, 2,000 quid a day?
Genuinely depends on the case. It depends on what type of case it is, who the expert is, whether they've travelled from the UK. I mean, obviously, if you're bringing an expert over from the UK, not only have you got to pay the travel to effectively compensate for the day before and the day after. But, you know, I've been in district court and circuit court cases where there would be an expert, who, you know, giving evidence about one thing in particular. And very often you wouldn't expect them to be charging anything like the same amount because the case simply isn't worth that much money.
I was telling somebody that you were coming onto the podcast, and they did tell me that there was a doctor, now he's retired now, in Ireland, who actually made a profession out of being an expert witness. So it is possible, isn't it?
It's certainly possible. I mean, it would, again, it would depend on the specialisation. I mean, personal injuries cases are...
I think he was a GP.
They would always be going through. If you're a GP specialising in being an expert witness, I mean... He may be specialising in, say, professional negligence cases against GPs, where there's a different type of requirement, whereas in normal personal injuries cases, you're simply just giving a report on the condition of the person.
So tell me, before we finish, one or two other really curious and particular, preferably some of the more daft cases that will put a smile on my face.
Well, I suppose the nature of litigation is that it's never funny for one of the people involved.
Well, that's a fair point. All right.
I suppose one of the cases that lawyers and non-lawyers tend to have a very different view of is the famous Stella Liebeck case, which you may not know the name.
No, I have never
this
heard
of it. This is the McDonald's coffee case. And this is the woman who scalded herself on hot coffee and was awarded, I think, over $1 million by the jury in New Mexico. Now, it sounded as if somebody had just taken a sip of coffee, burnt her mouth, and then sued for a huge amount of money. What actually happened in the case was this was quite an elderly woman in her 70s, I think. She was a passenger in her grandson's car, and they went to a drive-through McDonald's. She was handed the coffee by her grandson, and she wanted to put milk in it. So she opened the top, and when she opened the top of it, she had it sort of between her legs. It spilt and gave her third-degree burns.
Ouch.
So she was in hospital and injured not just her legs, but also her sensitive nether regions. McDonald's defended it on the basis that it was entirely her fault that she had spilled her own coffee and she was responsible for it. So it transpired on discovery that there had been 700 previous cases of scalding injuries suffered by McDonald's coffee. And once that came to light, it appeared that McDonald's knew of these cases and made a policy decision to sell coffee at a level where it was in danger of scalding people because they had discovered that their customers liked hot coffee. So they were selling it in drive-through. They were trying to suggest that people didn't buy it in drive-throughs to drink in the car, but to bring it home, which I think we all know is not the way people buy coffee when they're driving cars. So that led to, for example, the quotient contents is hot. They're giving us a sort of small trays to put the coffee in, obviously a huge amount more waste. The expert evidence is often obviously tangential, but the whole fact of the temperature that the coffee was sold at and the danger of scalding was obviously something that was very central to that case. And I think people who know more about the case tend to think of it less as an example of frivolous litigation.
And they used, obviously, an expert witness who was spotted this or something?
Well, experts on both sides, obviously, yeah. But the important thing in that particular case was the discovery that it turned out that McDonald's knew that they were injuring people every year and were continuing to sell hot coffee.
McDonald's. Mm. You know the last question we ask on the podcast, Mark. Who would Mark Tottenham choose to hire in a heartbeat? And would it be an expert witness?
As I said, I tend not to be the person choosing the expert witness. That tends to be the solicitors involved. I think, as you know, one of my other sidelines is that I run a website called Decisis. We have a number of excellent barristers who write reports on recent cases, and they keep myself and many other members of the legal profession updated on recent case law. And I would recommend any one of the Decisis writers as a hire in a heartbeat.
No, I'm stopping you there. I want a name.
I hire myself.
I want somebody that you would hire in a heartbeat, man, woman, or child, that you say, that's the person. You already have those people in Decisis working, whether it's for you or with you, but they're already on board. Mm. Who would you choose?
Any one of those people or somebody else?
No, you can choose anybody else you want.
Anybody else that I would employ, you're going to have to, I think the last time I was on the show, I suggested that I would employ Mike Bloomberg. So I'm trying to think if there's somebody even more elevated than that I could choose.
You're trying to cheat on me as an expert witness here, using your Decisis one. Give me a name, a man or a woman, possibly a lawyer. Is there a lawyer that you actually love so much that you would love to hire them?
Well, as you know, I can't possibly name all of the people that I work with or for because of the nature of our profession.
No. Come on. I'm going to make one final attempt to get a name.
I'll tell
from you.
Well, as you know, the other thing that I do is that I am the I'm the presenter of another podcast.
By I know what he's going
Fifth
to do
Court,
here now.
And the producer is absolutely an excellent person.
All right.
And I'd highly recommend him to anybody who wants to go into the podcasting
who is
industry.
That?
You might have come across a man called Cunnel O'Moran.
Oh, he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good
okay,
guy,
well, I'll let you off on that one.
Right.
Mark Tottenham, BL, Barrister at Law, who's also, as he mentioned there, editor of Decisis.ie, author of The Reliable Expert Witness, a book available on Amazon where it gets huge reviews, but it's also available everywhere else.
And Claris Press, the publisher, at just €20.
And he's also available for hire as a barrister, I gather, and he's wonderful. Mark Tottenham, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thanks, Connor.
Dundeal Motors is home to Ireland's largest range of new and premium used cars. That's why you'll find cars from Audi and BMW dealerships on Dundeal. Are you looking for a 7-seater to accommodate your growing family? Maybe you're after a luxury saloon to make a statement. We have the car for you. You'll also find Ireland's largest range of electric cars to help you make the switch. Visit dundeal.ie today to start the search for your next car.
De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil. Made in Mayo, sold worldwide. It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com. That Great Business Show.
And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 145. Great business insights and inspiration, all thanks to our sponsor, dundeal.ie. The only place to find your next car, new or secondhand. Do sign up for our email updates at thatgreatbusinessshow.com and we will send you all the latest news plus your own personal copy of the podcast that you can then share with all of your pals. If you want to advertise with us, go to that website. And we record at the Dublin South Podcast Studios where Lee Brennan is today's sound engineer. Engineer Supreme Peter Rice will add his magic later on, making us the best sound around. From me, so Conall O'Moran, Beachas to you all, agus slán tamall.